I was setting up randomly yesterday, I randomly grabbed one of the quilts and threw it on here. And Nancy tells me that this is the quilt she made for her, which, one of your children?
Daughter.
For her daughter. Yeah, so lovely to have a quilt made for a baby laying there. Also, it's Nancy's birthday today, so. And Marie, if you're watching, happy birthday. I've named a lot of critters in my life. Pets, farm animals, my children. It always feels like a big deal to choose a name for another being. The earliest memory I have of naming a pet was a cat that we got when I was a child. I asked all of my family members today if they remembered this story, and none of them do, so I may or may not have made up some of the details, but they don't know either. So I don't remember the order of the names, but we tried several names out on this cat before one stuck. At first it was Scratch, but then the cat scratched somebody, so we decided that was a bad idea. And then we named it Patches, and that didn't quite fit. After a few days with no name sticking for this cat, we all came downstairs one morning to find that the cat had gotten into quite a lot of kitty mischief in the night. Mischief became her name, and that stuck. On the farm, we've had lots of animals to name. The goats all get named after desserts. There's creme brulee, tiramisu, toffee, butterfinger, truffle. There have been many more. When I had a red dairy cow, I named her Molly Weasley. Her first calf was Bill. You gotta know Harry Potter to get any of this, sorry. And the plan was to name each successive calf after Bill by the next Weasley child, regardless of what gender the calf came out. When we were raising rabbits, all the breeding does and bucks got instrument names. The does were all stringed instruments. We had viola, balalaika, cello. And the bucks were all percussion. I think we had djembe and cymbal and maybe some others. At Thanksgiving, my sister, who was the one up here signing, didn't she do a beautiful job?
Yes.
My sister and her husband Ramon had to bring us their chickens, so we now have their 8 chickens living at the farm. I don't usually name chickens, but their chickens came with names. Things like chimichanga, dumpling, and fettuccine. There's always a debate on the farm about whether or not to name the animals that are destined to be food. I've named some of them, mostly the pigs, because I spent so much time with them and I got to know their personalities. Many of them were born on the farm, so I knew them from the very beginning. People say you shouldn't name those animals, but I did, and it never made it harder for me. It was hard enough. But that was just an important part for me of caring for them, was to call them by name. Naming my children, of course, was such a special part of becoming a mother. So many hopes and dreams wrapped up in choosing a name for another person, one that they might carry for the rest of their life. I love the sound of my children's names because of how precious they are to me. And hearing them call me Mama, it's one of the sweetest sounds I know. Well, maybe not when it's that incessant, Mom, 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 but other than that, knowing and using someone's name, it helps foster an intimacy with that person. There's something endearing about hearing someone speak your name with tenderness. When someone uses your name lovingly, of course, you feel seen and known and held. For folks who have changed their names because of marriage or gender transition or just preference, being called by your chosen name carries even more weight. And it's an expression of loving kindness to use someone's chosen name or pronouns, even if you don't understand the choice. Throughout our scriptures, we read of a God who knows us intimately, knits us together in our mother's wombs, knows every hair on our heads, and calls us by name. Think about that for a moment. All the people who have ever lived, all the people who ever will live. And our scripture promises that God knows you, down to the tiniest detail. In her commentary on this passage, Kayla Craig writes, "No matter how small or insignificant we may feel or we have been made to feel, we are intimately known and dearly loved by God, each of us a unique patch in the quilt of humanity." humanity. Our individuality is not lost on the vastness of creation, but is cherished and celebrated by the one who calls us by name. And then in this story of Jesus' birth, we read of a God who longs to know us so intimately, so fully, that God took on our human flesh. That song I sang is one that I've done here before. I decided to do it again this year because it fits so well with the theme tonight, that love knows our name. The whole song is so tender, both toward the infant Jesus and to our own fragile humanity. I really love the first and last verses. Here they are again. Tears are falling, hearts are breaking. How we need to hear from God. You've been promised, we've been waiting. Welcome, holy child. And then the last one, wrap our injured flesh around you, breathe our air and walk our sod, heal our hearts and make us holy. Tears are falling, hearts are breaking. Yes. I don't know about you, but I desperately need to hear from God. In this world that feels turned upside down, we need a God who brings peace into our chaos. A God who is not just out there, but one who is here, infleshed among us. Those of us on the progressive end of the theological spectrum, we tend to intellectualize God. We see ourselves as grounded in science. We grapple with how to conceptualize a good God when faced with the reality of evil in this world. And sometimes the best we can do is hold on to some amorphous sense of God as love, which is great. It's more of an abstract force in the universe than an embodied, enfleshed being. If that's where you are, that's great. We welcome folks all across the spectrum here. And every year we read these texts about Jesus' birth and wrestle with what it means to believe in a God who loved humanity so much that they took on human flesh in the person of Jesus. A few weeks ago, I was lamenting with someone about how when you are deep in the throes of grief, it's all well and good to say God is with us in that grief and all that, but sometimes you just want God to put a little skin in the game. Even as I said it, it struck me that that's what this story of Jesus's birth is all about. God wrapping our injured, fragile, imperfect flesh around himself, breathing our air and walking our sod, all to help us heal our hearts and find our way back to God. That resonates for me so much because sometimes I need more than a disembodied concept of God as love. I need a flesh and embodied personal God, one who knows my name, one who feels my pain, one I can wrap around me like a quilt, warm and safe, secure and loving and tangible, something I can touch. Whether we can articulate why we are drawn here tonight, or exactly what we believe about this story, we come seeking the hope and joy that is present in this Christmas story. We come yearning to experience the love of God, to experience Emmanuel, God with us. This sacred story is one of love coming to us in the most intimate, personal, and powerful way. Jesus was born during a time of political upheaval, as we've talked about these last few weeks. The Roman Empire saw people as mere statistics, numbers on a page that could be manipulated and used to increase the empire's wealth and power and enrich its leaders. It's not hard to think of other empires doing the same in our world today. But in the midst of that, God was writing a story of love and redemption that transcended the powers of the world, using ordinary people in their ordinary lives. God called Mary by name, a young girl, essentially a nobody from a nowhere town, reminding her that she was a blessing and inviting her to nurture God within her. And God called Elizabeth by name, Mary's cousin, a woman whom many thought was beyond her usefulness, and reminded them that they do not go alone. And God called Joseph by name, encouraging him to do the good that was his to do and participate in the caring and raising of God's own son. And God called to the shepherds, considered unclean and unworthy, essential to the economy and yet living in the margins of society. Luke doesn't name them, but I trust that God knows their name. It was to these humble and forgotten people that God first announced the arrival of the Christ child, reminding them that hope is worth the risk. The angel's message to the shepherds was not just a proclamation of some cosmic event out there, but a personal invitation. "Do not be afraid," the angel said. "I bring you good news, a great joy that will be for all people." The message is not generic. It is specific. It was for them, for the shepherds. It is also for you, and it is for me. Ordinary people called by God by name to begin again. The miracle of Christmas is God choosing to come as one of us. And tonight we celebrate that God who dwells among us and is with us always, Emmanuel. This God is not abstract or distant, but draws as near to us as a quilt around a newborn. The miracle of the Christmas story is that God uses ordinary people in ordinary lives to enter our world and begin again, you and me. And just as God knows each of the names in this story, God knows us by our names and is calling us to begin again, to embody God's love in this world. On this Christmas Eve, may we, like the shepherds, go out with hearts filled with joy, telling others that love has come, and love knows our name, and that name is Beloved.